everybody. This is the 10th lecture in our course on perspectives on Bhikkhuni ordination. And the lecture today is on the dictionary ordination rite and the Tibetan translation of the Mula Sahasrara Vinaya by the Mula Champak Sagyan. And it is my great pleasure to welcome you to our course. Mula Champak Sagyan received her Shramaneka precepts in 1981 and her traditional precepts in Taiwan in 1985. She did traditional training in the context of Tibetan monastic universities with Keshe Gupta Nyawang and other teachers at the Tibetan Center Hamburg in Germany from 1981 to 2009. She did appear and made MA studies in Tibetology and classical Indology with a focus on Buddhist studies at the University of Hamburg from 1997 to 2002. She got a PhD in 2009 from the University of Hamburg's Department of Indian Tibetan Studies with a dissertation on Lenmapa, Buddhist yogi scholar of the 13th century, the forgotten revival of Madhyamaka philosophy in Tibet. Since 2010, she is a principal investigator on the ordination of nuns in the Tibetan Buddhist canon and its presentation in the Tibetan commentaries at the University of Hamburg by the Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft, DFG. She has a visiting professorship at the Academy of World Religions of Hamburg University in 2012. And since 2013, she's a full-time postdoctoral research fellow at the Academy of World Religions, University of Hamburg. The project is Religion and Dialogue in Modern Societies, funded by the German Federal Ministry for Education and Research. So much for introduction, and now I disappear and leave you all to what is promising to be a very interesting lecture.
Thank you very much, Bhante Analayo, for your kind introduction and for arranging this course. And hello to everybody. Very happy to meet you. As you have already seen from the PowerPoint, I will touch five key points or four key points and then the conclusion. I start with the introductory remarks on the Mula Sahasrara Vinaya tradition in Tibetan Buddhism, because I noticed that many of you are more familiar with the Theravada tradition, is my impression. And then number two will be how to become a bhikshuni according to the Mula Sahasrara Vinaya. Then comes the relevance of Guru Dhamma 1 for the revival of bhikshuni ordination, which you may have already read in my paper, which was uploaded for preparation. And then comes number four, present-day ordination of women in Tibetan Buddhism, and then my conclusion. So, now I have the problem to scroll. Yeah, okay, it works. I start with my introductory remarks on the Sahasrara Vinaya tradition in Tibetan Buddhism. As we have already heard in lecture 4 by Venerable Damchö, the Mula Sahasrara Vinaya is a very long text of more than 8,000 pages containing many narratives. In a way, the Mula Sahasrara Vinaya has been outshined by the Tibetan translation of Gunaprabha's Vinaya Sutra and Ekottara Kama Shataka. The Vinaya Sutra comprises about 100 pages learned by heart by every Tibetan Vinaya monk scholar, and the Ekottara Kama Shataka is a collection of 101 legal acts. So these two texts are most important for the Tibetan tradition, even more important than the actual Mula Sahasrara Vinaya text nowadays. Then there are also other important Vinaya commentaries, similar to the importance of Buddha Gosha and his Samantapasadika in Theravada. There are two main Vinaya commentators known to the Tibetan Mula Sahasrara tradition, Gunaprabha and Shakyaprabha. Another important commentator is Dhamma Mitra. Furthermore, Tibetan literature comprises many indigenous Tibetan Vinaya commentaries which link the Indian Vinaya to Vasubandhu's Abhidharma Kosha. There's even a saying that without the study of the Abhidharma Kosha, you cannot understand the Vinaya. So, now I come to in order to understand the whole debate on the revival of Bhikshuni ordination and to find a solution, we need to go back to the roots, that is, to the Mula Sarasvata Vinaya itself. And therefore I come now to the origin of the Vinaya Pitaka according to Tibetan history, Tibetan understanding. The Tripitaka was laid down during the first council in Rajgir in the first rain season retreat after the Buddha's Nirvana, and the Vinaya Pitaka was recited by Utpali. And then in connection to the third council, a split into 18 Nikayas took place, also known as the 18 early schools of Buddhism. And there are 9 of the 18 Nikayas which have left behind Vinaya texts. Only 3 of them are complete. Number 1 is the Pali Vinaya of the Theravada. The 2nd is the Dhammaguptaka Vinaya of East Asian Buddhism. And the 3rd is Mula Sarasvata Vinaya of Tibetan Buddhism. Looking through the lens of Tibetan Buddhism, this means, on the one hand, the continuity of Vinaya explanation, and on the other hand, the continuity of Vinaya vows. So there's not only the scripture, but also the practice. In the Tibetan translation of the Indian Shastras, the commentaries, we find various presentations of what these 18 Nikayas are and how they came into origin. And to make it easy, there are 2 mainstream presentations. The one is Vasumitra and Bhava Viveka say that there was first a split into Staviras and Mahasambhikas, as it was presented also so far in this course. And then there is also the presentation by Vinita Deva and Shakya Prabha, according to which there was a split into 4 major sects. And these are the Sarasvatins, mainly referring to the Mula Sarasvatins. Many Tibetans believe that the Mula Sarasvatins and the Sarasvatins are the same and are even not aware that there is a difference between the two. And then there is the Dhammadgupta school. I show you this presentation not because I want to claim that this is historically more correct, but to point out that to traditional understanding in the Tibetan tradition, Dhammaguptaka is actually also one of the so-called Sarasvata schools. And then the 2nd is Mahasambhika, the 3rd Staviras, and the 4, number 4, the Samityas. So none of the living traditions can be traced back to the Mahasambhikas, but all 3 are considered to be Stavira. And he is also important, as we have already heard, to note that Staviras is not identical with Theravada. In Sri Lanka, the 3 Stavira schools known to the Tibetan tradition were unified in the 12th century AD. So before I thought that they are Mahavihara was, but from this course I learned that we can't say this for the present time, but only maybe up to the 12th century. But this is not my field of study. So we have to go into this again. Yeah, then I come to a short introduction of the Mula Sarasvata Vinaya in Tibet. The Mula Sarasvata Vinaya was introduced by the Bengali abbot of the famous Indian Nalanda University, Shantarakshita, who came to Tibet in 763. And for Tibetans, the Vinaya refers not only to scriptures, but also to monastic practice. They distinguish between the transmission of the explanation and the transmission of the Pratimoksha vows. And both of these were introduced by Shantarakshita when in 779 in Samye, the first Tibetan monastery, he granted Upasampada full ordination to the first 7 Tibetan men. There is no evidence yet that women were ordained too at this time. It is assumed that Bhikshuni ordination was never introduced to Tibet, so that Shantarakshita failed to bring Bhikshunis to Tibet. But still, we do have a count of Bhikshunis in Tibet between the 12th and 15th centuries. You have may read a little bit about this already from my papers I gave you for preparing. I'm not going into this now. But it is interesting to mention that the 17th Karmapa Ogyen Chinle Dorje mentioned recently the quote, "The histories show clear examples of many nuns in Tibet who received the Bhikshuni or Gelongma ordination, while there are documented cases of such great lamas as Shakya Chokten, Budong Chokle Namgyel, and the 8th Karmapa Mikyö Dorje conferring full ordination to women." To what we know so far from these biographies and the records we do have, these were all ordinations given by bhikshus only, and later a controversy started whether it is proper to do so, to give bhikshuni ordination by bhikshus only or not. So this is why it's getting nowadays so complicated with reintroducing the bhikshuni ordination in Tibetan Buddhism, because of these many discussions we have in the old texts. So now I briefly want to mention to you the four parts of the Tibetan Nilasavastivada: Vinaya, the Duva, Nindeji, Vinaya Vibhanga, Vinaya Vastu, Vinaya Kshudraka Vastu, and the Vinaya Uttara Granta. But the order we find in the Kangyur is different. The Vinaya section comprises 13 volumes, and it starts with the Vinaya Vastu, then comes the Vinaya Vibhanga, Vinaya Kshudraka Vastu, and Vinaya Uttara Granta. So means the Tibetans follow here the way how Gunabhava presents the Nilasavastivada Vinaya in his Vinaya Sutra. The last volume of the Vinaya Vibhanga, volume 9, is the Bhikshuni Vinaya Vibhanga together with the Bhikshuni Pratimoksha. And the Bhikshu Pratimoksha we find at the very beginning of the Vinaya Vibhanga in volume 5. So the Vinaya Vibhanga is considered to be a commentary on the Bhikshu and Bhikshuni Pratimokshas. The Mulasavastivada Vinaya has only 17 and not 20 vastus or skandakas, as you find it in the Pali Vinaya. Large parts of the Vinaya Vastu are preserved in Sanskrit, but there is no separate Bhikshuni Vastu. It is merged with the Kshudraka Vastu, only part preserved in Sanskrit from the Kshudraka Vastu, that is a fragment of the Bhikshuni Kamavachana manuscript C25R from the Bodleian Library of the University of Oxford. And somehow I feel, you know, that this is in a way very auspicious and exciting that these two huge volumes, only a few folios are preserved in Sanskrit, and that is exactly dealing with Bhikshunis. So this is a very, very precious text to which I think not enough interest has been shown so far, although it is known to the scholar tradition, but it doesn't belong to the Gilgit fundings, and in a way it had to be neglected because of fund situation. So now I come to my second point, how to become a Bhikshuni according to the Mulasavastivada Vinaya. And in a way it may be easy, you know, for you, if you are familiar with the Pali Vinaya, to try to empty your mind and try to follow up in a kind of beginner's mind, because otherwise you may get confused, because there are differences and we have to acknowledge, even there are many similarities, we have also to acknowledge that there are differences in the Mulasavastivada Vinaya comparing to other traditions. So the lecture today is based on the Tibetan tradition of precisely this precious Sanskrit text, the diction Kamavachana in the Chudraka Vastu. And this consists of two parts, the Mahaprajapati Gautami story and the manual for Bhikshuni ordination. Some contemporary Tibetan Vinaya scholars believe that no manual or ceremonial rite for Bhikshuni ordination exists in the Kangyur. Why is this? Because they can't find it in the Pravaja Vastu, in the first Vastu at the very beginning of the 13 volumes dealing with ordination matters. And so I was told when I presented some of my research outcome during a Bhikshuni committee meeting that they were all very impressed by seeing some of the folios in Sanskrit and learning that it really exists, and this changes also, I think, their approach and their own research. I would like to briefly say a few words on the term Kamavachana. According to Tibetan tradition, the Sanskrit term Kamavachana is equivalent to Pali Kamavacha, in English the formula for legal acts. And this refers to three kinds of formal acts. In the Tsitsu Munsegi journal, it is stated in an entrance on the Kama Vastu dealing with all these legal acts. I don't read the Tibetan now because most of you don't understand anyway. If one divides the acts of the Bhikshu Sangha at length, there are 101. If one summarizes all of them, there are three. First, an act consisting of a motion only. Second, an act consisting of one motion and a resolution put one time. And third, an act consisting of one motion and a resolution put three times. The Bhikshuni Kamavachana does not only contain formulas for legal acts, but it starts with a narrative, the Mahaprajapati Gautami story, reminiscent of a Nidana, a Lenji, which describes how women's ordination came into being, followed by the manual for Bhikshuni ordination, means the instructions of the Buddha on how to ordain women step by step. The crux of ordination, according to Tibetan understanding, so what matters most are the correctly performed legal acts, the Kamavachanas. So the main point whether ordination is valid or not valid depends on whether the Kamavachanas have been carried out properly. The focus today on the second part is the Bhikshuni Upasampada Jñapti instruction for conferring Bhikshuni ordination. But first let me briefly refer to the first part, the Mahaprajapati Gautami story, narrated in the Kshudraka Vastu. It is in some ways similar to the discourse on Gotami presented by Bhante Analayo during the first lecture in accord with the Madhyama Agama 116, preserved in Chinese translation. A few passages are important in the context of Bhikshuni ordination. When Ananda asked the Buddha for the ordination of women, the Bhagavan replied, "Ananda, don't ask that women go forth in the well-spoken Dharma Vinaya, obtain full ordination and become Bhikshunis. Why do I say that, Ananda? If women go forth in the well-spoken Dharma Vinaya, the Dharma Vinaya will not last long." Then follow the three similes. The Dharma Vinaya would not last long because, likewise, I shorten here, number one, a home in which there are many women and a few men is easily attacked and overwhelmed by robbers and abductors. Number two, the fierce hailstorm is falling on a field with excellent Charlie rice. The Charlie rice will be ruined, thoroughly ruined. Due to ill luck, it will become destroyed. And number three, if the excellent sugar cane of a householder who is a farmer is affected by a plague of mildew, the sugar canes will be ruined, they will become spoiled. This third simile, as far as I could see, does not occur in Madhyama Agama 116, but in the Tibetan and Sanskrit Nila Sarasvata versions. There is no reference to the depth of the mother like we have it in the Chinese version. Even in the Chinese translation of the Nila Sarasvata Vinaya, there is a short reference to the depth of the mother, but we do not have this in Sanskrit and also not in Tibetan. I have also checked this together with N. Heimann, and so this for very sure. Then comes the fourth similar, explaining why the Buddha lays down age principles to be respected, the so-called Gurudharmas. Ananda, in order to prevent and to avoid transgression, I have established 8 Gurudharmas for women, which should be observed by women for their whole life. For example, Ananda, a householder who is a farmer will, when summer is over and autumn has begun, dam the water at the mouth of the channel. Because the water is dammed, it will not trespass. Ananda, accordingly, I will establish 8 Gurudharmas in order to prevent women's obstruction and to avoid transgression. Let women keep them for life. Then follow the 8 Gurudharmas, and the first 4 are similar to the Madhyama Atma 116, but they also differ, and then after this there are also some differences. I don't want to go into this today. For the issue of Bhikshuni ordination, most important is the first Gurudharma, which reads, Ananda, after women have received the going forth and the higher ordination from bhikshus, they should well understand that they attained the status of a bhikshuni. So there's no mention of shikshamanas, no mention of bhikshunis. It just says, Ananda, after women have received the going forth and the higher ordination from bhikshus, they should well understand that they attained the status of a bhikshuni. The Tibetan differs here from the corresponding Sanskrit fragment. There's probably some translation problem involved. The Sanskrit reads, Ananda, the going for higher ordination and the status of being a bhikshuni should be expected by a woman from the bhikshus. So also the main point is the same, saying that higher ordination and the status of a bhikshuni should be expected by a woman from the bhikshus, no mention of receiving it from both sanghas. Sorry, there is a question. I'm a little bit far away. Tadaluka Bhikkhu Tiru, interesting about the debt to the mother only in Chinese. And Bhikkhu Anala, yes, Venerable Tadaluka, this keeps puzzling me because it is the same Vinaya, only different translations. Yes, that's actually puzzling me too. And yes, this is something we definitely have to look into, and I hope that Bhikkhu Anala and myself together can do this during the second half of this year. So recap here, the Buddha clearly instructed that a nun should seek higher ordination from the monks. Unlike the Pali Parallel, Gurudharma 6, there is no mention of Shikshamana ordination nor of ordination from both the Bhikshu and Bhikshuni orders. After promulgation of the remaining 7 Gurudharmas, Buddha spoke, Ananda, if Mahaprajapati Gautami has taken up and keeps these 8 Gurudharmas assiduously, in this case, this itself is her pravaja, that it itself is her higher ordination, that itself is her bhikshunihood. Then the Venerable Ananda was delighted and rejoiced in what the Buddha had said. Rejoicing, he bowed with his head at the feet of the Bhagavan and parted from his presence. He went towards Mahaprajapati Gautami. Then he said to Mahaprajapati, Gautami, the Bhagavan gave indeed the permission that women go forth and obtain higher ordination and bhikshunihood in the well-proclaimed Dharma Vinaya. Nevertheless, the Bhagavan has established 8 Gurudharmas in order to prevent and to avoid transgression by women. They should be observed by women for their whole life. They should be applied assiduously. Gautami replied, I will listen to what the Venerable Ananda says. Please speak. Then the 8 Gurudharmas are reported by Ananda to Mahaprajapati Gautami. Again, the first Gurudharma is, Ananda, receiving the going forth and the higher ordination from the bhikshus, women should well understand that they attained the status of a bhikshuni. Also, the Sanskrit fragment again reads, Ananda, the going forth higher ordination and the status of a bhikshuni should be expected by a woman from the bhikshus. So Ananda reports to Maha Prajapati that the Buddha instructed that a nun should seek higher ordination from the monks. There is no mention of becoming a Shikshamarna first or receiving higher ordination in front of both the Bhikshu and Bhikshuni order. These were later developments and the Bhikshuni order had not been founded yet. After having reported the eight Guru Dhammas, the Tibetan repeats a sentence from above which is not repeated in the Sanskrit version. So this sentence become a third time, so it's the Tibetan translator puts here a lot of emphasis on it. This sentence, Ananda, if Maha Prajapati Gautami has taken up and keeps these eight Guru Dhammas assiduously in this case, this itself is her pravaja, that itself is her higher ordination, that itself is her bhikshunihood. Maha Prajapati joyfully accepts the Guru Dhammas. Venerable Ananda, the Bhagavan, in order to prevent womankind's faults and to avoid transgression, has established these eight Guru Dhammas. Women should observe it for life. I accept them with my speech, with my mind, and even with the crown of my head. So she takes the eight Guru Dhammas up like a crown on her head. It is like this, Ananda, and I'm not sure whether this is to be found in any other Vinaya than in the Mula Savastivada, but I thought it's worthwhile mentioning it. It is like this, Ananda. Any girl from the Kshatriya caste, a Brahmin girl, a girl from the Vaishya caste, or a girl from the Shudra caste, when she has thoroughly washed, fully anointed, cut her hair and nails, put on white clothes, and if she is given an Utpala flower garland by someone, a garland made of the flowers of the Champaka tree, the Parishakaka garland, or a lemon tree flower garland, she would take it with both hands, well pleased and delighted, and put it on the highest limb of her body, the head. Venerable Ananda, likewise, with regard to the Bhagavan, in order to prevent woman's obstruction and to avoid transgression, having established these eight Guru Dhammas for women, which should be observed by women for their whole life, I accept them with my speech, with my mind, and even with the crown of my head. Then comes the final sentence of the Maha Prajapati Gautami story in the Mula Savastivada Vinaya. The Bhagavan, since Gautami Maha Prajapati accepted the Guru Dhammas, gave her permission for bhikshunihood consisting of going forth entire ordination. Recap, Maha Prajapati received her ordination from the Buddha through Ananda by accepting the eight Guru Dhammas. There is no mention what happened to Maha Prajapati's retinue of 500 Shakya women, nor of whether and how they became ordained. So from a legal perspective, ordinations through accepting the eight Guru Dhammas is an ancient rite. It cannot be applied for day ordination. And for present-day ordination, there is the current rite, and this has to be applied, and it is laid down in the manual for Bhikshuni ordination, which follows next. It is important to note that the Mula Savastivada Vinaya contains no precedent story for ordination by bhikshus, as you find it, for example, in the Pali Vinaya, but an earlier formulation of the first Guru Dhamma instructing women to receive pravaja and upasampada bhikshus. So then comes the bhikshuni ordination manual, the bhikshuni upasampada jñapti. So without any clear caesura, the ordination manual starts, and the text continues almost imperceptibly, just the actors change. Maha Prajapati and Ananda are not mentioned again, but Upali enters the stage, quoting the sentence from above, omitting the salutation Ananda, but it is this sentence I pointed out to you before. Then Venerable Upali asked the awakened, the Bhagavan, Venerable, you, the Bhagavan, said, If Mahaprajapati Gautami has taken up and keeps these 8 Guru Dharmas assiduously, in this case, this itself is her Pravaja, that itself is her ordination, that itself is her Bhikshu mode. Yet, Venerable, how do the other women become ordained, fully ordained, obtain Bhikshuni mode? And the Bhagavan said, Uttali, the other women should be gradually ordained and fully ordained, or step by step, however we are going to proceed. When the Bhagavan said the other women should be gradually ordained and fully ordained, the Bhikshus did not know how to proceed gradually. When the Bhikshus asked the Bhagavan this kind of question, the Bhagavan answered, I think there was some Bhikkhu Analaya, we also have the girl with lotuses in the Sarvastivada version, which I translated. Oh, thank you for pointing out. I didn't have the time to find out. And then I just checked, and the symbol of the lotuses is also found in the Dharmaguptaka, Mahasangika, Manishasaka, and Theravada versions. So this seems to be common ground. Okay, thank you. Mahaprati Gautami and the 500 Shakya women received Pravaja and then were fully ordained and attained Bhikshunimut by accepting the Guru Dharmas. Other women should proceed gradually. Recap again, there is no mentioning that in the interim Bhikshus alone have ordained women. Rather, the Mula Sarvastivada Vinaya stipulates that the 500 Shakya women, just like Mahaprajapati, had become Bhikshunis by accepting the 8 Guru Das. So I think this is really different. The Mula Sarvastivada Vinaya version of the Mahaprajapati story does not tell the story or the foundation of a Bhikshuni order, but to carry out women's ordination step by step, it is required. Only after having clarified how it came into existence, the actual ordination manual starts. So recap, only from the introduction to the ordination manual, we learn that the 500 Shakya women who accompanied Mahaprajapati had become Bhikshunis namely by accepting the 8 Guru Dharmas. We don't understand this from the Mahaprajapati Gautami story. So then comes the actual ordination manual after this has been clarified with all the individual steps of a woman's ordination which are presented in a single manual. So regarding the introductory steps, it's important to mention that there is no setting up of a monastic boundary. The only time a boundary is explicitly mentioned is at the time of the Upasampada. No formulas for the determination of simas, including the need to be... So there are no formulas for the determination of simas included here in this Kama Vachana. They need to be amended where required from other parts of the Vinaya, where they are explained in more detail. A female applicant has to approach first any Bhikshuni, and she has to be interrogated on obstructive conditions and will then be admitted. Then comes the triple refuge and the acceptance of an applicant as Upasika. This comprises in brief an explanation of the 3 refugees and the 5 rules of an Upasika. Then come 3 bows to the Buddha, 3 bows to any Bhikshuni. Then the recitation of a formula for triple refuge and a request for acceptance as Upasika 3 times. And then comes the recitation of a formula for the bestowal of the 5 precepts of an Upasika 3 times. So this is not considered, according to Tibetan Vinaya, to be a legal act by a sangha. It can be done by one person. Then comes the Shramanirika ordination. This starts with the appointment of an announcer, Bhikshuni, from among the Bhikshuni Sangha, who has to ensure that the other Bhikshuni has interrogated the applicant on obstructive conditions. Then follows the summons of the Bhikshuni Sangha and an announcement that the Upasika is seeking Pravaja under the Upadhyayika so-and-so, that she wants to receive Upasampada, the higher ordination, and is pure with regard to obstructive conditions. Then comes the redress to an acharyika to become her upadhyayika. Then follows tonja by a hair-cutting bhikshuni and taking a bath in the presence of the hair-cutting bhikshuni, including a discreet testing of her being with unambitious genitals while providing her with robes and an alms bowl. And then comes the pravaja ordination in front of the upadhyayika, which is 3 bows to the Buddha, 3 bows to the upadhyayika, triple refuge and abandonment of the signs of an householder and acceptance of the signs of one going forth, a pravachita. Then comes the appointment of a Shramanerika preceptor. Here, interesting, the upadhyayika asks another bhikshuni to give the Shramanerika precepts. Then comes the request to be accepted as a Shramanerika. Then the assessment of the time and the day and the season of the year by any bhikshuni, and the bestowal of 10 precepts of a Shramanerika by the acharyika. This is all the same as you are used to from other vinayas. In general, there may be minor differences, but in general, it's almost the same. So, recap, it is important to note that so far, although the Sangha was summoned and several bhikshunis were actively involved, no leaked by a whole bhikshuni Sangha is mentioned. And I also remember from my Shramanerika ordination in the Tibetan tradition that there were 2 bhikshus present at time, and that it was not a whole Sangha, but it took place in a remote area in Hamburg in the Tibetan center, so maybe in other monasteries, in big monasteries, the whole Sangha will gather there, I guess. So then comes the Shikshamana ordination. This is 2 years training in 6 main precepts and 6 subordinate precepts. And there are 2 different persons for the women who can receive the Shikshamana ordination. So the 2 years training in 6 main precepts and 6 subordinate precepts can be given to one who is staying at home and has reached the age of 10 years, or to a woman who has reached the age of 18 years. The ritual contains the summoning of a sangha of at least 12 bhikshunis bowing to the assembly. So here we have really the mentioning of a call or parishada, and I think this implies that here determination on boundary is required. Then comes the request for and bowing to an upadhyayika, request from the noble female sangha to receive training for 10 years under the upadhyayika so-and-so in 6 main precepts and 6 subordinate precepts. Then follows a formal application or motion by a bhikshuni to the bhikshuni sangha to carry out a legal act of bestowing shikshamana training under the upadhyayika so-and-so. 1 declaration or resolution by the Karmakarika of the actual act, the Karmavachana, and then the announcement of the decision. So recap, Shikshamana ordination requires a legal act by a Sangha of at least 12 bhikshunis, consisting of a motion and a resolution put 1 time. Then comes only after this the teaching of the Shikshamana precepts, the 6 main precepts and the 6 subordinate precepts. I don't go here into those. If you are interested, which are these 12, we can do this later in the forum by discussion. Then comes the Upasampada, the higher ordination. The provision for higher ordination starts the request by the Shikshamana for the Brahmacharya Upasana Samvritti, which I, for the time being, translate as permission for the celibate life. So this is about literal translation, permission for the celibate life. This is something, a provision required for higher ordination, and this has to be requested by the Shikshamana from the Bhikshuni Sangha. and this entails outfitting the candidate with 5 robes and the iron spoon and appointment of the Rahu Shasika, the Sanghutanpa, this means the teacher in secret, and by the Kamakarika, and by the Upadhyayika. Then comes the gathering of a Sangha of at least 12 bhikshunis, 3 bows to the gathered assembly, and then the request either Shikshamana for the Upadhyayika or an Acharyika to become the Upadhyayika 3 times, then blessing, taking into possession of the 5 robes. I mean, the Tibetans always speak about Jinlab, and Jinlab is really the common term for blessing, and everybody in the today living tradition considers it's really a blessing. And if you separate from your robe after full ordination overnight, then the blessing is gone and it needs to be re-blessed. And we have rituals how to do this, how to do this blessing. But I think, I mean, if we compare it to other Vinayas, it's more the taking into possession of the 5 robes. But I noticed also during my ordination in Taiwan that together with every robe a special mantra was given. So somehow the robes being sacred and having a certain blessing seems to have become stronger over the time in Buddhism. There's a question I'm seeing now by Tadanuka Bikunite. Why implied determination of sima boundary? What do you mean by why implied? Does it mean implied determination? Oh, I see, implied because, why did I say implied? Because it doesn't say very clear now here we have to set up a boundary. When, for example, we do the Pushada ceremony, the Uposatha in the Tibetan tradition, then there is a very clear formula of how to set up the boundary. But this is here in this text, we don't find it so explicitly. So it seems to be only implied, and I have to go deeper into this. But by studying the texts of Petra Kiefer-Pilz, this term also occurs as one kind of boundary. So I think it is setting up a boundary, but there is no formula at this point which clearly instructs how to set a boundary. I hope it's clear from this what I meant. Thanks for asking. So then comes the verification of almsbowl, means there are different sizes, and it has to be verified whether the size of the almsbowl is correct. And then comes again this blessing or taking in possession of the almsbowl, and then the confirmation of the instructor in private, the Rahu Shasika, and trust in her by the Bhikshuni Sangha. And then the Upadhyayika entrusts the Shikshamana to the female instructor through soul application. And comes the exhortation of the Shikshamana by the instructor in private to be honest. And then comes the interrogation by the Rahu Shasika, by the teacher in private, concerning the Antahika Dhammas, so the obstructions to ordination. And here I have done started a comparative study, and I think there are many more questions, and wherever, even in the Tibetan canon, it occurs, whether you compare it with the bhikshus and bhikshunis, or whether you compare how it is stated in the Kangyo and the Tengyo and so on, it's always a little different. And there are so many questions. And my first impression is that just being afraid that something could miss in the ritual, in the rite, if they were not sure what was meant, they just added sometimes the same question again, which was put in a little different words, just to make sure that the whole ritual is complete and nothing is missing. So we have here about 40 questions, and then comes the interrogation concerning previous ordination, the Shikshamana training, depth, name of oneself, and the Upadhyayika. So these are another four questions. Then come seven more questions, and then interrogation concerning diseases, a long list with 43 questions, and then instruction by the teacher in private to come for interrogation in the midst of the Sangha. And then there is a request by the teacher in private to the Sangha to let the Shikshamana enter, and approval by the Sangha. And then comes the request by the Shikshamana, or he or she is referred to as Upasampada Prekshini, to the Sangha for Brahmacharya, Upasana, Sangriti, this permission for celibate life. And then comes the formal application by the Karmakarika for interrogation concerning the Antayika Dharmas in the midst of the Sangha. Then comes the interrogation in the midst of the Sanghas concerning the Antayika. Maybe this is doubled. No, yeah. First comes the formal application for it, and then comes the actual interrogation in the midst of the Sangha, and then a repetition of the interrogation as above with all these many questions, but this time not in private but in the midst of the Sangha, and then formal request to the Sangha by the Karmakarika to grant Brahmacharya Upasana Sambhuti. This is also something, as you will know perhaps from the Nuns Congress 2007, something specific only for the Bhikshunis in the Lila Sarastivada Vinaya, so far as we know. And then comes one declaration of the actual act by the Karmakarika, an act consisting of one motion and resolution put one time, and the announcement of the decision. And then comes the karma in the presence of the twofold Sangha, Ubhaya Sangha is the term used here. There, the formal act in the presence of the twofold Sangha starts with a request for Upasampada and is introduced as follows. After the whole Bhikshu Sangha, consisting of at least 10 Bhikshus, has gathered and is seated in a small boundary, and the entire Bhikshuni Sangha, consisting of at least 12 Bhikshunis, has gathered and is seated in a small boundary, the ordainee should go in front of the Karmakaraka Bhikshu, kneel on a bunch of grass or on a cushion, put her palms together, and request Upasampada from both Sanghas. She says, Venerable members of both Sanghas, please listen, I named so-and-so for a special purpose, say the name of Upadhyayika so-and-so, under whom I'm seeking full ordination. I named so-and-so, request full ordination from both Sanghas. Then follows a formal application by the Karmakaraka, by the Karmakara Bhikshu. So here, even the name of the Upadhyayika is mentioned, but when the two Sanghas come together, it's no more the female, Karma Acharya, but it is the male Karma Acharya, the Karmakaraka Bhikshu, who takes over guiding through the ordination. And so here comes a formal application by him for interrogation concerning the Antayika Dharmas in the midst of both Sanghas, followed by an exhortation and all the interrogations as before, but this time in the midst of both Sanghas. This is somehow comprising, when we have the story in mind, how it's explained in the Theravada Vinaya, where the main point was that the women, the nuns-to-be, ran away because they felt ashamed of being asked all these questions in front of bhikshus. So, but here is no mention like this, but again, all these questions are repeated in front of the male and female sangha, in front of both. And then comes the formal application by the Karmakaraka for Upasampada by both sanghas, the declaration by the Karmakara of the actual act three times, and then the announcement of the decision. This time, boundaries are mentioned, and an act consisting of one motion and a resolution put three times is performed by a twofold Sangha. So obviously this is the most important part of the bhikshuni ordination. And finally, after ascertaining the time when the higher ordination has been received, the principles or guidelines to be observed are announced by the Karmakaraka Bhikshu. And these principles are, first, the three supports of life. So the nuns, different from the monks, have not four supports of life, but only three, followed by the eight defeats and the eight main downfalls, and then the eight principles to be respected. And the eight Guru Dharmas are repeated here once again as an instruction, then come the four Dharmas for a recluse. So then, I'm typing. So then I come to number three, the third point of my instruction. How is the time going? Is it still okay to go on? Then at Bhikkhu Analayo, I hope I can, I should be able to finish, and within the next minutes I can start to become a pastor. Comes now the relevance of Guru Dharma 1 for the revival of Bhikshuni ordination. So after the ordination of Maha Prajapati and the 500 Shakya women, by accepting the eight Guru Dharmas, these became part of the current rite. This is the point I really want to point out here, that according to Tibetan Vinaya, the Maha Prajapati and the 500 Shakya women all became ordained by accepting the eight Guru Dharmas. Even we don't have the story for the 500 Shakya women doing so. We have only this short repetition at the beginning of the ordination rite. And then these eight Guru Dharmas became part of the current rite that needs to be applied for present ordination, at least can be applied for present ordination. They became guidelines to be observed. The instruction that bhikshuni should receive ordination from bhikshus is depending on the circumstances and therefore is still valid. In legal terms, in the living tradition, the first Guru Dharma would have to be considered either as a permission or as a prescription. This permission has never been withdrawn, but for centuries was repeated after each and every bhikshuni ordination carried out. An ordination received by accepting the eight Guru Dharmas is the ancient rite, and in front of both communities is the current rite. The advice to receive the going forth and the higher ordination from bhikshus remain part of the current rite and therefore should be still valid. A prohibition that an ordination cannot be performed by bhikshus alone is not recorded in the Mulasavasti Bada Vinaya. And, okay, thank you. So, number four, the present-day ordination of women in Tibetan Buddhism. So, for centuries, bhikshus, including His Holiness the Dalai Lama himself, give the Upasika precepts, the going forth, and the Shamanerika precepts to women by employing the male manual for ordination. This means for women's ordination, the same manual is used as for men. For the specific intermediate steps, however, the manual for females has to be applied. The manual for males does not provide formulas for bhikshuni and brahmacharya vastana samvritti. These intermediate steps are required in order to arrive at what tradition reckons to be flawless and perfect bhikshuni vows. So, this means it requires Shikshamana precepts and the Brahmacharya Upasthana Samvritti, both supposed to be conferred by a Bhikshuni Sangha alone. So recap, Vinaya scholars who hold this view will also assume that Shramanerika vows given by Bhikshus alone are not flawless and perfect Shramanerika vows, but that they are vows involving a minor infraction. In this case, we have to ask whether Upasika and Pravaja given by bhikshus need similar to be considered a minor infraction, or whether exceptions are possible, and if so, under which circumstances and based on which instructions. What is at stake is the question whether in the absence of a bhikshuni sangha, Shikshamana ordination and Brahmacharya Upasthana Samvritti can be given to Shramanerikas by a bhikshuni sangha, So, I mean, nobody is questioning that Upasika precepts are given by bhikshus to the lay people. But actually, these are also part of this right. So the question is, does this also involve infraction or not? And or does it? Do we have evidence that bhikshus are allowed to give also Upasika precepts? I don't know how this is in the Pali Vinaya. And then, I mean, regarding the Shramanrikas, you may have seen from my paper, there are about two different streams within Tibetan tradition. Some feel it's okay if it is given by the Bhikshu Sangha and it has been practiced for centuries without questioning it. And but there are also, especially in the Karmakagyu tradition, teacher who say since there is no Bhikshu Sangha, they can't give the Shramanrikas precepts. So Samdong Rinpoche during the Hamburg Congress in 2007 said, bhikshus may, if necessary, leave their summer retreat, that is the rainy season retreat, to confer Shramana ordination, which is normally given by bhikshunis alone. This allowance implies that bhikshunis are not available to give such ordination themselves. Inferring from this, where no bhikshunis are available, the brahmacharya and bhikshuni ordination ceremonies may also be performed by the bhikshu sangha alone. This we can find in the Varshavastu, the section of rainy season retreat, that indicates that a bhikshu can leave up for 2 to 7 days in the following cases. First, a Shramanrika asks him to come in order to confer on her the training of a Shikshamana. And second, a Shikshamana who has completed the 2 years training period asks him to come in order to confer on her higher ordination. This mission can be understood in 2 ways. The last one, he might go to participate in a higher ordination performed together with the Bhikshuni community, or he might go to participate in a higher ordination performed by a Bhikshu community alone. That the higher ordination can be given by Bhikshus alone is only clear from the first Guru Dhamma, which I have quoted before several times. So the permission that the Bhikshu community can give the vow of full ordination and the vow of a Shikshamana and also the Brahmacharya, Upasthana, Samvritti is there. We read in Gunaprabha's Vinaya Sutra, it is also similar for the Shikshamanas regarding the Brahmacharya, Upasthana, Samvritti and the higher ordination. This is very brief. As I mentioned to you, the Vinaya Sutra has only 100 folios, so every statement regarding everything is very, very brief. So it just says it is also similar for the Shikshamanas regarding the Brahmacharya Upasthana Samvritti and the higher ordination. And then in Acharya Dhammamitra's extended commentary on the Vinaya Sutra, he explains on this. The meaning of it is also similar for the Shikshamanas regarding the Brahmacharya Upasthana vow and full ordination is, if a Shikshamana wishes to receive the Brahmacharya Upasthana vow and also full ordination and the Shikshamana is outside the boundary of the bhikshus, then to accomplish these 2 purposes for the benefit of the Dharma, to bestow the Brahmacharya Upasthana vow and to give full ordination, bhikshus, even if they have accepted the rainy season and are inside the boundary, may leave the boundary for up to 7 days after having done the requisite blessing, stating that they will return within this time. So again, here we use this term, jinlap, blessing. It's a kind of asking for permission that one may leave up to 7 days. While these indicates are not from the Vinaya itself, but from the commentaries, they do have a comparable importance for members of the tradition who consider the Vinaya commentaries as authoritative. So I come here to my conclusion, but first let us see what Chamundamudina says. What are the 4 requisite dharmas of a recluse? Cannot remember how they were translated in the I hadn't mentioned them. No, no, these four are different. I can give you later. First, let me finish this. We can do. Mm-hmm. It's actually, you know, these four are these that if somebody is scolding you, you shouldn't scold back and so on. So I can give you the exact text later. Then number five is the conclusion. So we have clear canonical evidence that based on the first Guru Dharma, bhikshus can give all stages of women's ordination if circumstances so require. And if performed by Tibetan Mula Savadivada bhikshus, the bhikshunis would automatically become part of the Mula Savasivada lineage. So in a way, we would be here on a safe side if we do everything by the Mula Savasivada bhikshus. But then using the female right, this would mean that they have to act where it says a bhikshuni says, and then a bhikshu has to do this. And this happened in the history of Tibet, I think during the ordinations, Shakya Chokten had given to his mother and others. And so there was a lot of discussion on this. So there is also this discussion whether we could have the ordination, I mean, that the male part is done by the Mula Savastivada bhikshus and the female part by bhikshunis of another tradition, say the Dharmagupta bhikshunis, but then we have this problem of intermingling two Vinaya schools, and this is not part of my today's lecture, but with this I want to deal during the IABS conference in Vienna in summer. So I can check for Venerable Dhammadina. I can find the text here, let me search the four requisites. I have to open the text first. So it takes a minute. Just let me see again where did I mention them? It was at the end of the Bhikshuni ordination rite, wasn't it? Bhikkhu Anala, you asked me a question. I wonder if doing both ways, one after the other, would be the best way to proceed, first only by the Mula Savastivada monks and then dual ordination as a sort of Dhanikama. Yeah, you know, this is something, I mean, I also think about again and again. And the point is that I see there are two problems. The one is, as we have discussed before, the Tibetan Vinaya commentaries are linked very much to Abhidharma Kosha way of thinking. And as you know, in the Abhidharma Kosha, we do have this Namparikcha Mahindasuk non-revelatory form, the, what is it called in Sanskrit? I forgot the term in Sanskrit. Maybe you can help me with the non-revelatory form, the Avijñāti Rūpa, exactly. And so, means that in the Abhidharma Kosha, it is explained that it is, and you can even find this in the Bhikshu ordination rites, which are used today, also in the Shramanirika rituals. We always have a certain point when the teacher, the Upadhyayika or the Kama Acharya, I don't remember who of the two it is, but who snips with a finger and says, well, now you have to think you really became a Vichyotomini or Shramanera, Shramanerika, Upasaka, and so on. So you repeat the things that need to be repeated three times, and then they instruct you before they speak the third time, and you repeat the third time, they instruct you. So at the end, when I say again these and these words, the final words of the verse, and I snip with the finger, then you think, now I became a Shramanerika, or now I became a Bhikshu, and so on. And there's really this belief that then a vow, a samvitti arises in all parts of your body, wherever there's empty space. This pratimoksha vow arises, and it stays there up to your death. Means when you are reborn, you cannot collect any negative karma by not keeping the pratimoksha precepts, because the precept is gone together with giving up this physical body of this life. So this is very strong in the Tibetan tradition, and they also explain that once there is this precept, no precept of the same kind can arise another time. And if it is broken, they even speak about the corpse of a vow, which is that means it's you collect no more good merits, and it also hinders that the same precept can arise again. So means that reordination of the same kind is not possible according to this understanding. So, I mean, and I think it's really difficult. I spoke with monks from the different Tibetan traditions when I was there for this Bhikshuni ordination research meeting. And I asked them whether all of them think that it is this way, or whether there is a difference, because I saw also in some Tibetan commentaries it's explained in a different way. But today all seem to hold the same thing, that there is this Abhijñapti Rupa. So this makes it very difficult. And then yeah. So I just wanted to see the Bhikkhu Anaya was. Yeah, and then the Dali Karma, as you know, the Dali Karma is not part of the Vinaya, but it's part, I think, of the. Is it where it's explained in the Samantapasarika? Or so anyway, it's nothing that is original from the Vinaya, but a later development. So the question is, what is really the meaning of Dali Karma? And it's very difficult to translate this. I mean, we say it's a strengthening karma, but we don't have something like this in the living tradition or in the commentary literature. Well, I have found some point in the biography of the 13th Dalai Lama, which could imply that they did have something similar in earlier times, and that the Dalai Lama was keeping two Vinaya lineages. But again, monks of his tradition claim that this is a misunderstanding, and that this needs to be clarified, and they don't agree that this is possible, because they have this very strong Abhidharma thinking in their mind. So I think we do have to find some other ways. And let me see here, I asked, Sarvastivada Vinaya has, after the Jnanapati Chatuddha Karma, instructed him on the three, on the three requisites. I know what you mean. This is, the nuns are not allowed to sleep under the trees. They are. They should have medicine and simple medicine. Just let me see the exact wording, because my English is also not so good. The three supports of life. Um, It says that from among the robes, from the chivaras, you should take the wrecks, which can be found on the cremation ground. And then it gives a long explanation, but I don't go through the whole explanation. And then the second one is that from among the food, the alms food, the pindapata, it is appropriate and easy to obtain. And then the number three is the medicine decoction of herbs. So it doesn't say anything about cow urine, but it says medicinal decoction of herbs. It's in Sanskrit, puti mukta vaishajya. So, these are the three given, but the monks have in addition that they should stay under trees, and this doesn't count for the dictionaries. And so this were those you were asking for. Karma Lakshya Soma, what evidence is there that His Holiness the Dalai Lama himself and others gave the Shvamanirika precepts for centuries? Yeah, this is an interesting question. You know, when there was one of the meetings on Bhikshuni ordination in 2006, the year before our Congress took place, then at that time, in the break, when I had raised this question, some bhikshus instructed me that there were a lot of controversies on this point, and it would be better if I don't raise the question again, because this could lead to the fact that the nuns will not get any more the Shvamanirika precepts, even they have received them for centuries. So whatever was the motivation of saying this, when in 2011 I had met with Gelugpa Vinaya scholars, selected the best ones from the three main monastic universities. First, I had a meeting in Mundgott settlement with Vinaya Bhikshus from the from Ganden and Drepung Monastery, and then I went to Serra Monastery and a meeting with 10 bhikshus, 5 from Serra J College and 5 from Serra Aniko. And during that time, one of those monks who argued in a very strict way what it means to be to involve minor falls, then I thought if the way he's arguing, then this must also be true for the Shvamanirikas. And I just wanted to find out, to test, you know, whether I'm right or wrong. And he said, exactly as I supposed, yes, this also goes for the Shvamanirikas then. And then we had a lunch break, and I had taken some Shvamanirikas from the Mundgott Nunnery, which our Tibetan Center is supporting since the 1980s, who have done almost the whole Geshe studies. And I asked them during lunch, because they are a little bit shy to speak in front of the bhikshus, especially on Vinaya issues which they haven't studied, I asked them how they feel about this. And whether they also think that their precepts are not perfect and faultless. And they didn't agree. They said, we have received our Shvamanirika precepts from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and he would never give us something that is involving faults. For sure it must be faultless. And then after the lunch break, I brought this answer back to the bhikshus and asked them how they would respond to this. And this was really groundbreaking, because at this moment, when they understood the importance for the nuns that their precepts are pure and that His Holiness has given them, and that this would imply that he is giving something that involves a fault, they felt obviously very uncomfortable, and they really tried hard to get out of it. And then Geshe Rinchen Mödöp had a solution from the text how to explain, and finally they all agreed to it and were very happy of seeing this text. They even asked to bring the text and to show them. So So I guess there is no evidence, you know, this is something we have to ask them, which evidence they have for doing so. And it seems to be somehow forgotten in the tradition. They don't remember why they feel it's okay to do so. Nobody knows. But they are just doing it. So then Bhikkhu Amalani, wow, that is fascinating. About the 13th Dalai Lama, yes. He really has this two Vinaya lineages, one going back to Shantarakshita and the other one, and a biographer has brought up a whole book on the lineage of holiness, the Dalai Lama, and has changed the historical text at a certain point, in this biography of the 13th Dalai Lama, because he feels this cannot be because of this Avijñāpti Nirūpa. So actually there in the text it says something like that for the embetterment, the Dalai Lama received both lineages. So this could imply that he was ordained two times from the two lineages to be the holder of both lineages. And but the biographer felt that this is not possible and tried to find evidence to prove this. So this is also still something that needs to be further researched. Then Bhikkhu Amalani wrote begging food and medicine, right? Thank you. So the PDF text has four recluses Dhamma before the eight Dhamma. So I was wondering, so let me see whether I have a mistake here in my text. The three supports of life I have given, then the eight defeats, the eight principles to be respected, and the four dharmas for a recluse. So I guess you are referring to this four. This is something different. This is what I mentioned. These are called also the four Shramani Karaka Dharmas, Chatvaraha Shramani Karaka Dharmaha. And these are this is only a draft translation. The four qualities which make a shrama, which are these four from today, with the incense and so on. Let's see. I'm really sorry, I can't find it so quickly. I don't want to take so much of your time. Here it is. Very short, from today's evening. So one, if someone insults you, do not insult back. If someone enrages you, do not enrage back. If someone beats you, do not beat back. And if someone derides you, do not deride back. So these are the four. Traditional service about the Abhidharma mindset, how to address the gender sex problem if the party moksha sambhara is given by bhikshus alone, then their Avijñāpti is related to the male pratimoksha, but that of bhikshus to female pratimoksha. No, I think this is no problem. I mean, at least according to the commentaries I have studied with my teacher on this, the Vinaya commentaries, it is really so that they explain that the most important thing that the pratimoksha vow arises is that you have a renunciation, really the wish to get out of samsara. So this is a precondition, very important. They have explained different causes that lead to the arisal of the Pratimoksha vow. And then also very important is to carry out the ritual, that there is the decision by the Sangha. And it's very clear that nothing is going, that this is not a vow that goes from the continuum of the teacher to the continuum of the student, but that it is really something that arouses due to causes and conditions. And the inner cause is the renunciation, and the outer conditions are that the Sangha is performing the ritual correctly, and you on your side have really this wish, I want to become a bhikshuni, and or I want to become a shamanerika. So, and then if it is decided by the Sangha, then it's done, and it has arisen. And this is not something that goes from one continuum to the other. So it doesn't matter. And you know, we can prove this, and this happens actually in Tibetan Vinaya literature. We have this story that in the Vinaya Ottara Granta, where the Upali asked the Buddha what happens if somebody has changed sex and whether this person needs to be reordained or not. And the Buddha's response is that reordination is not necessary, but that when a bhikshu changes sex, then the then automatically he becomes the bhikshuni and therefore has to shift the order and has to move into the bhikshuni order, and from there on follow the rules of a bhikshuni. And other way around, if a bhikshuni suddenly changes sex, then she is bhikshu and has to change the order, but she doesn't need a reordination. And by this, they show, according to the Abhidharma Kosha, that the substance of the Pratimoksha vows is the same. It's vechik. So same substance, or I think it's the meaning is about the same as saying it's of one nature. So actually, there is also, you know, in Tibetan tradition, there's this strong tradition of a debating court. And they say, for example, there's a debate, why do the bhikshunis have more rules than the bhikshus? And then one response is, well, this is because they have more attachment, and so they are more sick, and therefore they need more medicine, and therefore they have more rules. And so it turns out that they say, because of this sex change story, they say that then by keeping more rules, the merits they gain from keeping the vow is the same. So they keep more rules, and by this it gets a balance. So this is, I think, one of the traditional views. I don't know whether every monk accepts this on the debating court, but at least my teachers do accept this. And then we now get to do which question in relation to Geshe degree, Bhikkhu Anayana Yo. For women in studying the Vinaya, we had some discussion in Forum 1 on only fully ordained monastics being allowed to read the Vinaya. I believe this is also an issue in the Tibetan tradition, in that for being able to complete fully the Geshe training, which has recently been opened to females, they would have to master also the Vinaya, but since they are not fully ordained, they are not allowed to read it. Is that correct, and could you add anything to complete what I said? Yeah, actually this is half correct, half incorrect, because they are not allowed to study it, but they are allowed to read it. Reading is not the problem. Actually, in the context of Ikshuni research, there was even a letter by the Department of Religion and Culture in Dharamsala instructing all the nunneries that they should read through the whole Vinaya and help to find certain things they were searching for. And the nuns hesitated to do so, but actually they had consulted the Vinaya scholars before. It is considered to be very meritorious to read the Vinaya. This is not the problem, but it's very difficult to understand the Vinaya if you read it. But the point is, you cannot ask a teacher to instruct you on Vinaya, to give you really the teachings, means also the transmission. This is, you know, what I said before with the Shegyun and Domyun, and for us, for example, if nowadays a Tibetan author writes a book, then after he has, usually he only writes the book if somebody is requesting him to please write this book. And then the text, after it has been written the first time before it goes into print, then the teacher will give the oral transmission of that text to the students, or the one student or many students who have requested for this text. So means there's a the own commentary by the author, the auto commentary given to the students. So this has a long history in India, that whenever, for example, if I ask a teacher, can you please teach me the Bodhicayavatara, then the teacher will say, yes, since I received the Bodhicayavatara from this and this teacher, I can give it to you. And that, when he starts with giving the Bodhicayavatara teachings, he will say, well, I give it to you, the transmission of this and this teacher who gave it to me at that occasion. So the same goes for the Vinaya. I mean, when you explain how to follow the Vinaya to a student, this would mean you give the transmission of, for example, the Bhikshuni Pratimoksha, but you can only give the transmission of the Bhikshuni Pratimoksha to a Bhikshuni. You can't give it to a person who is not fully ordained. That is the problem. So this is why the nuns are not allowed to study. And there's also a saying that if you give the teaching before, later there will be obstructions for the student to practice it if you give it before. But anyway, for myself, my teacher had decided, although this is a very important tradition, that for us Westerners, since we are not living in a society where we see how the Bhikshunis and Bhikshunis practice, he felt that for me, giving the explanations on the Shrama Erika precepts and also on the Bhikshuni precepts, at least the main ones, in advance so that I can check whether I feel able to keep them is okay. So, but strictly speaking, this is not possible. So the nuns who do the Geshe degrees, they study the Shrama Erika precepts as they have been explained by Shakya Prabha, but they are not allowed to study all parts of Guna Prabha. But there are teachers like Geshe Rinchen Myodup in Dharamsala for the nuns in Germaling. He also teaches them the first parts of Guna Prabha's Vinaya Sutra, where it is explained the nature of Pratimoksha vows, how they arise, how they degenerate, and so on. So everything that is more in general, also valid for Upasikas and for Shramanirikas, he is explaining to them. So, yes, the gender change stories, I think, are really important. Then Tatanuka Bhikkhuni theory, so the lineage is neither male or female. Oh, yeah, this is the question I really put to the monks when I was down in Serra, and actually later Tibetan Geshe helped me to write the most important points down in Tibetan, and then he even gave it to the monks who were on this Bhikshuni committee. And when I arrived, I noticed that they really appreciated this question, because I asked whether Mahaprajapati, having received the Bhikshuni precepts or by the Buddha himself, by accepting the 8 Guru Dharmas, whether she had then already a lineage or not. And they felt she must have a lineage, but it was very difficult to say because it's the first person. And then I asked, how is it about the Bhikshunis, if they receive the ordination from both, so that they have two lineages or one lineage. then they felt it can be only one lineage. And then the question was whether it is the Big Shmi lineage or the Big Shmi lineage, and then they felt it's the Big Shmi lineage. And then the question was, well, then you mentioned in your texts and also in the Vinaya Uttara Granta, the Upali approaches the Buddha and asks him, when bhikshunis were ordained by bhikshus only, is this ordination valid or not? And they said, yes, the Buddha said it's valid. And then I said, so you accept that if bhikshunis are ordained by bhikshus only, this is a valid ordination. At that time, the vow arises, is clearly said in the commentaries. So do these nuns have a lineage or not? And they were sure it's a lineage. But then when I asked, so then having received it only from the bhikshus, is it then the bhikshu lineage or the bhikshuni lineage? They got really into trouble, you know. And I think it made it very clear that we don't find it anywhere in the text. And so when in the 1980s, the Department of Religion and Culture had asked the respective researchers to examine the Bhikshuni lineage. The question is whether the Bhikshuni lineage really exists. You know, I mean, we all speak about it, that, about the revival of the Bhikshuni lineage, but what does this really mean? And so, I mean, this is... it's really difficult, and then it turned out that there are two patterns of thinking in the Tibetan tradition. Some feel that there is a lineage, and it comes from the Upadhyayika, and therefore she has to be involved, and there has to be a Upadhyayika, and therefore you can only have the Dhammagupta lineage nowadays, and you can't have the Bhikshu lineage. But I think from the research I have done now, it's very clear that actually the main part in the Buddha Sarvastivada Vinaya comes really from the bhikshus and not from the bhikshunis. And therefore, I think as long as the bhikshu lineage is alive, there's also a latent bhikshuni lineage and can be revived. And I don't think that if we speak about this dejik, this being of the same substance or not, since it's of the same substance, it just depends on the candidate, and then the vow will arise if there are all the conditions complete. So I think that there is no, you can't say that there are two different lineages. I think in its essence, in its substance, it's one. But I guess you don't have this problem because you don't have this Samvara vow thinking and this Abhidharma thinking in the Pali, like we have it in the Vinaya Sarvastivada tradition. What is the word for same substance is Dzechik. So what is this in... Oh, what is this in Sanskrit? I have it in my paper. I think it should be in one of the footnotes of my paper, which I wrote together with Bhikkhu Analayo. Let's see whether I can find it so quickly. I'm not sure, is it Javyam? Something like this. Sorry, no, I have to check up in the Abhidharma Kosha. I can't say it now from my memory. Unless somebody of you has it at hand, I can't say now. And then, but it's in one of the footnotes of my paper published with the Journal of Buddhist Ethics. And then Shramani Vidama Dina, same argument about just changing the Pratimoksha in such case is found in the Panchaskanda Vasha, the Dhamma commentary. Thanks for pointing out. If you know the exact place, then it would be very good to help. Or perhaps you can even translate it and publish it. This is again very fascinating. Yeah, I think my time almost over, 11 minutes left, so in case any other questions, I'm happy to reply, otherwise... Oh, thank you. Okay, thank you so much. Very kind of you. So I haven't been in this forum yet, but I will try and find out how it works. Thank you. Thank you also for taking interest. I really appreciate your questions. Very helpful. Giving me a lot of feeling. Thank you so much. Thank you. Goodbye to all of you. Thank you, Banta Nala, you know, for arranging. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you too. Thank you. Goodbye.